Ramble.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of You Can Sit With Us. My name is Maggie. I'm one of your hosts, and I am joined today by Miss Becky.
Hello.
Rachel is here today as well. And Rainey on the ones and twos. Here we are.
Hello.
Hi.
Matt is off supporting a friend, which we love to see.
Yes.
But he really wanted to be here today.
Yes.
So he's sad.
I know. So this is a very exciting episode. Becky is going to be talking about what she's been up to the last couple months. And then next episode, we will have Keith to hear his side of the story. So where do we go from here?
Guys, it's actually been like 3 months since I have sat upon this chair.
How's it feel on your tushy?
Still kind of uncomfortable. These are my favorite chairs.
Yes.
I won't lie, but it feels good to be here.
I know.
It feels nice to be back.
So where have you been? You want to start with that?
Where have I been?
Where have you been?
I've been all over the world. No, I haven't been all over the world. So a few months ago, Keith and I were on vacation with Jared Popkin.
And As one does.
We are everyone's favorite throuple.
Yeah.
We were on vacation and I was pregnant.
Yep.
And my water broke. 2 months early, and I wasn't in labor, so we had to go to the hospital, and everything is good and healthy. We'll preface with that, so that if anyone's like, I don't know, baby stuff and like labor and birth are like very, I think, triggering things for some people. So if that's you and you don't want to listen to this, go ahead and skip it. We have a healthy baby. Gender is a construct. It's a boy.
You're sitting here with us.
I'm here. I'm
You're
healthy.
Looking
yeah. Everybody's healthy, happy, and safe. So you can go ahead and skip this whole episode if you want.
Yes.
But yeah, we had a baby.
You had a baby.
He was here with us. Yeah, he likes to come out to the office. He parties.
No, but I mean, he's been podcasting with us like before you left. And
Technically. I was like, what do you mean he was here?
He's here.
Yes, he was here and the podcast.
He's been sitting with us.
Yes, he loves to sit with us. He was on Guilty Pleasures. He enjoyed it a lot. we definitely did not think we would talk about having a baby. Like, that's what I've, you know, said before. I was like, one day we'll just show up.
Yeah. Even long ago, you said, like, I'm not going to, like, put my pregnancy out on the internet.
No. I was always just like, eh. You know what I mean? And so I'm too paranoid. I'm too anxious. Like, things can go wrong. You can end up having a high-risk pregnancy, which did end up happening. So it's just one of those things where you're like, I'd rather just not until we know everything's all good.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of things happened with my pregnancy that were like, and again, I'm not speaking for everyone who's given birth, not speaking for everyone who's been in the NICU.
No. This is your experience.
This is just truly my own. I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving you advice. Do we need any other disclaimers?
No, I think there is a long tradition of lots of people sharing birth stories with each other.
Yeah.
Like, both in person, I've heard almost all of my good friends, their birth stories, because birth is a wildly unpredictable, improvised event. And I sort of like to tell new moms, I think everyone gets something. I've never heard of a first-time birth where it was like, and that was the loveliest thing that's ever happened to me. Something occurs. It's a wild thing.
Yeah.
So, like, I think in terms of sharing with the community of moms, like, sharing your birth story is helpful because no two birth stories really look the same.
So we had been trying to get pregnant for about a year, and we were actually, like, just at the point where most OBs and my general doctor was like, we can't start doing fertility testing until it's been a year of trying.
And how do they even know? Are they in your bedroom?
Okay,
below?
You want the Rachel Cole perspective?
We're not going to get into that. Go ahead.
I will say I got my IUD out. So they had a pretty distinct time of
But your reproductive endocrinologist wouldn't know that. I tell people, just tell them you've been trying for a year. Because I'm like, then it takes, once I saw an RE, it took another like 6 months.
Yeah.
So if you are not, if you're not getting any younger, I'm like, just go for it.
Yeah. I had a lot of friends who was very similar where they had gone to see their doctor. It had been the year and it was probably another like 3 to 4 months before they even got all their appointments in order and stuff like that. Like
it takes,
it seems to be
months.
A very long process and I'm very glad that we did not have to do that.
Yeah. Especially like, when you're trying,
every month,
4 months
sure
seems like a long time.
It is such a long time.
I know in hindsight,
It doesn't
That's
seem
not
like
that
a lot.
Long, but when you're in it, it feels forever.
Oh yeah.
So I'm always like, just tell them you've been trying for a year. Go. Yeah. Get some help.
Yeah. And it's just everybody's different. And I had gotten some tests done in terms of like blood tests just to make sure mm-hmm. that everything was good. Turns out they did not test for everything.
Oh, yeah. They only taste like one. I think they test your like AML or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So the one that if they had tested it sooner in my blood, there's a chance we could have gotten pregnant sooner, which was my progesterone level was mm-hmm. very, very low, mm-hmm. like almost non-existent mm-hmm. low. So I had to start progesterone once I got pregnant. So we actually, yeah, we had gone through about a year. So by the time I actually found out I was pregnant, I was 5 weeks pregnant because mm-hmm. it starts from the time you had your last period to when you miss your period. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, I was only able to get a doctor's appointment because I was bleeding. So if I was in a state like Texas and something was very wrong, I would not be allowed to get an abortion at that point. Like, because nothing felt different about my body. Yeah. Like, right. If I had not been, you know, if we hadn't been trying for a year and I wasn't testing all the time, like peeing on a
you wouldn't
stick,
have known.
Would no. not have known. And that is why we need, like, let's let everyone get abortions if they want to. I think the most torturous thing we can do to people is make them be pregnant.
Yeah.
In my opinion, not fun. And didn't like it, don't recommend it.
In a country that provides absolutely no resources for childcare at all whatsoever once you have the baby. So it's like, you have to keep this baby and also good fucking luck to you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So for anyone that's confused about why we need more policies that don't discriminate against when you got pregnant, it's because you truly, truly will not know you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Until, you know, it could be 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, even it was even hard. I think I was 5 weeks pregnant and then I started bleeding at 6 weeks. And had I not been, my appointment was scheduled for 8 weeks.
Wow.
Right.
So it wasn't like
you can't
like
even
your
get
checkup.
In to see a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was kind of not good that I was bleeding because that's scary. You're like, oh, yeah. fuck. You know, we've been trying mm-hmm. for a year and bleeding is like not the best sign of things.
No.
But that did lead us to getting an internal ultrasound, which I've had before. I've had like 3 or 4 internal ultrasounds mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. nobody has ever in my life said the words bicornuate uterus to me mm-hmm. ever.
Do you think they didn't know? How
I have
could they have
no
missed this?
Idea. I don't know if they weren't looking for it. If they, uh-huh. I mean, because they were looking, when I had gone for ultrasounds before, they were looking for something else, you know, looking to see if my IUD was in the right place was usually what it was.
Mm-hmm. I guess an IUD isn't as far up, though. That's just,
I think that some of them have like really, a limited
like
view range.
Yeah.
Because I think that because of your experience, the last vaginal ultrasound I had, I was like, everything looked good. My friend found out this about hers. And they were like,
you're like, what's your like, shape look like?
My friend's looks like this. What does mine look like?
Yeah. And they were like, I actually can't really tell. But I mean,
yeah,
because what you have is rare, but it's not like ultra rare. Yeah. Like this is a thing they should be able to tell.
Yeah. So having a bike, there are different shapes of uteruses. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know
no
either.
No clue.
TikTok also taught me there are different shapes of vaginas. I didn't know that.
I knew that.
Yeah.
You've seen like art, right?
Art. Maggie, general. Is Maggie art? Is moving her arms for those listening in the shape of like an L, like she's a dancer.
What art? You've seen like, you've been in museums.
Know. You know,
I've seen a collage of just
like
different.
I thought it was like, you know, like arms, like they're all kind of the same without being identical, right?
Oh, okay.
But TikTok showed me some molds and I was like, wow, they're very different looking.
Yeah, think about hands. Hands are different.
Like my hands do not.
Oh.
All right. So anyway, what's your uterus shaped like?
Yeah. So a typical uterus is like the shape of like a pear or like, you know, kind of roundish. Mm-hmm. But about 3% of people have a bicornuate uterus, which is what I have, which is when I was in my mother's tummy, my uterus, as it was trying to form, stopped. So instead of going all the way up, it stopped and it looks like a heart.
Your little heart.
So they call it a heart-shaped uterus. Aww. And they call the two little sides of it a horn, which is not so cute. I'm like, why can't we call it like heart half. Like he's your in my right heart half, my left heart half.
Yeah. The horns.
The horns.
But yeah. You have horns.
Yeah. So I have horns. And so they could be different. You could also have like a septate uterus. I think I'm saying it right. And that means they're totally separate. Mm. Also with bicornate uteruses, they can be different depths. The heart right. could be like a teeny little heart. It could be a really deep heart. It could be a medium heart, whatever. But they don't typically like look for that. You'll usually only see it if you have a C-section because they're opening you up and they'll be able to see it. Mm-hmm. Or if someone catches it like mine, where it's like, usually you would get like a scan also to see if you had it. Mm-hmm. Mine, they were always like, oh no, you've got one. So we were like, so we're pretty deep here.
Yeah. So it's pretty very deep, clear.
Very clear, very clear. And it was crazy because it was one of those things where like the ultrasound tech was like, did you know you have a bicornuate uterus? And I was like, no, what's that? And then she kind of tells us about it. And then you just leave. You just go home and you get to go on your phone and Google like horrible things.
Oh, my God. Scary things.
It's scary things. Google it's only is scary.
Unhinged.
Yeah, it's definitely. And that's another reason why I want to talk about it, because like if you do get that information, it's not always horrible. Like my OB and my high-risk doctor were both like, Maggie came with me to one of my appointments. They're like, okay, tell me what you Googled. And I like listed all the things that I had heard about having this bicornuate uterus.
Yeah.
And because at that point I had other things, which we'll get to. So fun. If there's a 10% chance you can get something during pregnancy, I got it. Except for gestational diabetes. I was very scared. I was like, I'm going to get it. I was like, I have all these other things. I'm going to have
and
gestational diabetes.
And you also love candy more than
anyone.
It has
nothing to do with the amount of candy you eat. I Googled it.
I Googled it. It's not that you would cause it. It's that you would suffer more because you love having a little sweet treat every day.
Absolutely so sad. Yeah. Yes. That would have been hard.
It would have been hard for you.
Yeah. So we found out I had the bicornuate uterus. We had our appointment with our doctor. She was like, most people have a totally normal pregnancy. The only thing we have to worry about is basically he could only grow in one side of my uterus. So he has 50% of the uterus to grow in. Mm-hmm. So the fear is that he would get too big. He would have growth restriction. Mm-hmm. But they were like, you know what, right now?
He's measuring
totally
good.
Fine. He's measuring good. Like, you're all good. We'll see you back in a couple weeks to do your anatomy scan, which Maggie actually came with me because Keith was out of town. Mm-hmm. And because anatomy scans are kind of scary. That's when they're looking at like the heart, the brains, the limbs, they look at everything of your baby to make sure everything's tracking well. Right. And so we had our anatomy scan and they're like, yeah, we really can't see anything. And we were like, why? And it was because I have an anterior placenta, which that I had heard about on TikTok before. So basically you either have an anterior or posterior, some sort of other anterior placenta.
You either have it on the front of your uterus and the baby's under it, or you have it on the back and the baby's in front of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or you have both and you have your twins in between.
Yeah. Yeah. But
it has to attach to one side or the other. Yes. So it attaches on the front or on the back.
So mine was attached on the front. And since he's only growing in 50% of a uterus, my placenta was completely covering that side of it.
Right. So they couldn't see him as well.
They can't see him as well. Finding a heartbeat's a lot harder because your placenta like makes noise and it's like whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah. And I remember they kept telling
your placenta makes noise?
Yeah. It goes like whoosh, whoosh.
As blood flow.
Whoosh.
Oh, like a heart. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember they kept kept reassuring you like, oh, if you don't feel movement, then that's when. And Becky's like, well, I have. My placenta prevents me from feeling any kind of movement. So, like, how am I supposed to know when I should be worried?
Because, like, at a certain amount of weeks, you should be doing, like, kick counts where you're kind of feeling the baby move. And I really, my entire pregnancy, only felt him move once or twice a day. Uh-huh. And when we first, probably, like, I don't know, maybe 27 weeks, we went to the emergency room just to make sure that everything was okay. Because I was like, we would put Harry Styles on my stomach and I'd be like, I don't know if I'm blowing out this kid's eardrums, but like, I need you to like punch me somewhere so that I know you're still there.
Yeah.
And we went in, everything was obviously totally fine. It's not that he's still, it's you can't feel it.
You can't feel it.
Because the placenta's preventing it from feeling.
When did you start feeling him move?
A long time. Past 20 weeks. I'm looking at you because you were at the anatomy scan. Yeah. I'm like, I don't think I was feeling him move by the anatomy scan. Yeah. It was late 20s is when I felt anything at all. And even that was like it was so subtle, like almost like a burp or like a little bit of pressure, but mm-hmm. not anything in
like
particular.
Feet or anything like that, just because the anatomy.
Yeah, and there was never a point where, like, sometimes you'll see other people, like, showing. You can see, like, a little, like,
the foot
push uh-huh. out or something like that. Like, that never happened. It was always pretty, mm-hmm. like, rounded. But then when we went and did the anatomy scan at the high-risk doctor, that Maggie was all...
Maggie was
my doctor
VIP.
I just got to sit there. I remember there was one point that they had you take your pants off, and we were putting the curtain around you. And Becky's like, you're just gonna see a lot of me today. I was like, it's cool, girl.
They were like checking my cervix, and Maggie's like, I'm gonna look away. And she's like, I feel
whatever
like
you
I
want.
See, I feel like it's private to see your cervix up there in such a big way. But when they were checking at the high-risk doctor, we also found out that I had a marginal cord insertion, which is something that happens to about 8% of people, mm-hmm. where you typically want, from what they told us, you typically want the umbilical cord to be attached as close to the center of the placenta as possible. Mm-hmm. And ours was attached about as far away on the side as it could be. Mm-hmm. So the fears with that are like that he's not getting enough nutrition because mm-hmm. it's not getting into the placenta. And then also during birth, if they're a little too aggressive, when he's coming out, it could rip the cord. Mm-hmm. So you just like, it's just like something to know. But it's like, for us, the way they explained it was not dangerous. But the combination of marginal cord insertion and bicornate uterus was like small baby is what they were worried about, that he's going to mm-hmm. come out really, really tiny.
Right.
So into my third trimester, we were at the doctor, we were measuring, and she was uh-huh. like, which we love our OB, she's like the most kind person in the world. She was like, oh my gosh, baby is looking good. She always called him baby.
Baby
is looking good. We were talking about, like, you know, if you make it to 41 weeks, like, would you be interested in induction or should we wait? Like, my OB was very, like, it was all a conversation. It was never like, you should do this or you should do this. It was all a conversation.
And he was, in your third trimester, he was measuring normally.
Measuring totally normal. He was
small baby, but you were doing
on track. He was on track. He was not measuring tiny. His weight was good. His mm-hmm. length was a little longer than expected. Which, based on his dad, it's like,
he
had a
Keith?
50-50 chance. But he was measuring quite long. And then, we had seen her. We saw my high-risk doctor. They were like, everything is looking good. Like,
and how are you feeling?
I was feeling, we were like, oh, yeah, we're going to make it. Because we had been pretty worried before that of like, okay, he might come a little early. He might come a little early. Mm-hmm. But we were thinking maybe 36 weeks, 37 weeks, like a little early. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that can happen, which mostly with what happened to me with my water breaking, is another uncommon thing that happens to people. Mm-hmm. Most people who give birth, the doctor breaks their water. Mm-hmm. So the water will break when they're at the hospital or when they are, you know, going into labor. My water, I was sitting on the couch, as one does with Jared Popkin, just mm-hmm. eating candy. Mm-hmm. Keith was making us dinner.
Yep.
We were watching a documentary. And I just felt like I peed my pants. And I was like, oh.
Weird.
And I was in jammies. And I was like, oh. And I just kind of stood up. Jared looked at me. I looked back at him. And I was like, eh. You know.
I don't want to announce that maybe I just peed my pants.
You know, and I think you could clearly see that I had maybe peed my pants. And he was just kind of like, okay, maybe Becky peed her pants, like YOLO. So I get up. And then.
YOLO.
I get up. And it happens again. And I'm like, Oh, at this point, I'm running to the bathroom. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, maybe my bladder's just like...
My pelvic going floor is just different.
Yeah. Now. Mm-hmm. But it's when I get in the bathroom that I realize like, oh, this is like a large amount of fluid. Mm. And at this point, and up until like we were in the emergency room, I was like, I'm leaking fluid. It's fluid. And Keith's like, your water broke. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it's fluid.
Mm-hmm. Why knew.
It's not.
He knew it was water.
Oh, because
you weren't sure.
I was just not admitting it. No, it's fluid. It's something else.
Yeah,
it's just a little bit of fluid coming out. At this point, I have my bathing suit bottoms on with a towel. Like, there is no stopping this fluid that's coming out. And he's like, no, we're going to go to the emergency room. And I was like, okay, let's go. Went to the emergency room.
Was it a little bit of denial because you weren't having contractions?
Yeah, I felt totally normal. I was like, no, it's not. It's not. It's just fluid. Nothing's wrong. I was like, nope, we're going to go there and they're going to say it's fine. It's okay. It's not my water. If I'm it not was giving like, birth right now.
Yeah.
You would know.
You would know if
I
my water
know.
Broke. Okay. I think I would know.
It's my water.
Yeah, it's my water. Which, I would by know the if way, it broke.
If your water's leaking, it doesn't matter. You got to go. It doesn't matter if you're not having contractions or you don't know. That's not good. You got to go.
That's what we learned about when we got there was there's this, it's called PROM, which is, or the rupturing of the membranes, ROM, is when your water breaks. Mm-hmm. PROM is when your water breaks before
it's supposed to.
Before it's supposed to. And then PPROM, which is what I had, is when your water breaks before it's supposed to, before the baby is term. And what they considered term for PPROM is 36 weeks. Mm. So my water broke at 33 weeks, so about 7 weeks early. And I like just gotten to 33 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the reason we learned that that's like dangerous to happen is because the way it was explained to us is that the water basically protects you and the baby from infection. Mm-hmm. And so when we get there, they're throwing around things like sepsis. And Keith and I are like, what? What are you talking about? Because at this point, we're also trying to leave. I was like, oh, this was a mistake. We shouldn't have come to the hospital. We should have gotten in the car and drove home. Because again, we're on vacation. We are not in the town we live in. We are not at the hospital we're used to. I'd never been to this hospital. And our first experience, too, with the doctors were, I love my nurses. Mm. My nurses were phenomenal. My nurses in the NICU were phenomenal. I did not have one single good experience with a doctor except for the woman that delivered doctor that delivered the baby. Every other doctor was horrible. Their bedside manner was horrible. Like at this point when I was in the ER, they had this, he explained to us that he was like a retired doctor that was just like on call. He's not the normal guy
he's
that's
retired,
there.
But he's the one in the ER?
He's like a retired OB. He's like the overnight person because it's around midnight. I know.
That's
like,
really crazy.
Okay, I don't love this vote of confidence from you, sir.
Seems like he was like last resort and like sort of 100%. Shouldn't have been there at all.
100%. Yeah. And he was 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, just 1,000 years old. We called him the turkey man because he did resemble a turkey.
Okay.
And honestly, I'm only being so mean to this man because he was horrible.
Oh. Yeah,
I'm in full tears because I'm like,
what is happening?
I'm on the phone with
supposed to have
our
this baby.
Yeah,
yet?
I was on the phone with our doctor or the on-call doctor at the hospital we were supposed to deliver at. And actually, he was very kind on the phone. Like I could hear in his voice how upset he was for us that we were in that situation.
Yeah.
But he was like, you have to stay. He's like, if you were in the car and you were already on your way, I would tell you keep driving and just come here. But since you did the right thing and you went to the hospital, like, do not leave. Like, it would be so dangerous for you. It'd be so dangerous for the baby.
Right.
So I'm full crying. Keith is white as a ghost. And this doctor has the audacity to be asking me, because we're like, okay, we're going to get admitted. Let's do it. They ask you what medications you're on. Mm-hmm. I have been on Zoloft for 5 years probably at this point. Mm-hmm. I have a psychiatrist. I have an OB. Yeah. I have talked to them about this. Mm-hmm. I have talked to them.
Zoloft is the one that's great for pregnancy.
It is the most researched antidepressant and anxiety for pregnancy. Is the way my OB and I talked about it is much better for my baby. For me to be on Zoloft and not having panic attacks than to be, you know, than for him to not have the residual Zoloft that's going into his system.
Mm-hmm.
This doctor was like, oh, you're on Zoloft? Oh, usually I tell my patients that, you know, we want to get them down lower. You're like probably 4 or 5 times higher than what I tell my patients to be on.
But, why would you say that right now?
And he goes,
first of all, you're
not
in the ER to have a baby. He's not your doctor.
Yeah. And then he goes,
I am mad.
Oh, we were livid. And then he goes, usually I would have my patients be on less, but we don't want you going through withdrawals right now. So, and Keith and I are like it's the TikTok sound. The woman was too stunned to speak. We were both just like,
huh?
Why are you talking to me about
this? Yeah, I know. He's not going to change your protocol. He's just shaming.
Yeah. And the setting, the scene, we're in this, like, the hospital we gave birth at was very nice once we got to the labor and delivery unit. And once we were in the NICU, like, those were very nice places. Their ER was horrifying. It was like something on a TV show. I was in this little room with a little cot. I'm on like a puppy pee pad. Like, I remember Maggie talking about all the things that were happening at the ER when Zach was there. So I am watching these people like a hawk. This one nurse was coming at me without gloves on to like look. And I was like, ma'am, are you going to put gloves on?
Pee-prom.
And she like started laughing. She's like, of course I'm going to put gloves on. And I was like, okay, but I just like don't see any gloves on your hands right now. So I just wanted to be sure. So I was very nervous about where we were because of that. And so Maggie and Rachel are Googling, like, is this a good hospital?
I didn't tell Becky. I was looking it up, and I was like, maybe they'll medevac you back to Los Angeles.
That's what I was like trying, because I was like, okay, he's going to be premature. Let me like look at like the level. Is this a level
NICU?
NICU. And I was like, okay, I'm not texting Becky about this. I'm just like doing this on my own.
We found this out later.
Maggie and I were texting each other about it. We were like, okay.
Yeah.
I see what this is.
Yeah.
But by the way, I gave birth at a very fancy hospital in Los Angeles and had to go to the ER a bunch that next week right after. And it was horrible, and I was misdiagnosed every time, and it was truly abysmal. So I think ERs are kind of like a bad place in general.
It was just like bad vibes. I mean, there are good doctors and good nurses, just like in every like
in
profession.
Every
they're
ER,
going to be
sure. Yeah.
I do not think that this man was representative of that whole hospital. And when I told my NICU nurses about this man, they were like, and I told them about my anesthesiologist too. Which we'll get to him later if you want to hear some. A lot of rage is my. I will forever remember this man's face and be like, you, if I ever find him again. But yeah, so we got admitted after that. They gave me some drugs to try and stop, like prevent labor from happening. But I wasn't in labor. So there was no, they weren't preventing anything. It was, they explained to it, like they gave me magnesium, I think it was, to make sure that his brain was like formed fully, or like something was better with his brain.
But then was it to stop contractions?
It's also to stop contractions, but it's something to give him more time to like have his brain develop. I don't know. Maybe that was the steroid shot. They were literally just like, here's shots, here's shots.
I think they give a shot for
me
the lungs.
Full of
for
fluid.
Sure.
That's the steroid shot.
That's the steroid.
They're pumping me full of fluids because obviously I'm still losing a ton of fluid.
Yeah.
I am ballooning. I mean, I am just getting more and more and more and more swollen. Like, I was on the little cuff, the blood pressure thing was like torture. They were like, try to sleep. And I'm like, it feels like my arm's going to fall off.
Becky.
Because it was pinching so bad. But then the next morning when our actual doctor got there, he was like, oh, no, you don't need to be on the magnesium. It's okay. The crazy thing that Keith and I are always like, I can't believe they said this so many times, because you're like, what is wrong with you people? They were like, you know, you're at 33 weeks. Number one, they told us, they were like, the mortality rate's really good. And we were like,
oh, don't say the word mortality.
We were like, that made our faces drain. We were like, that's good. Thank you for letting us know. But they were like, but it would be like better if he could stay in until Friday. So this was like a Monday. They're like, it'd be better if he could stay until Friday. And we were like, okay, give me drugs. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. I was like, I don't even feel like I'm in labor. I was like, I'm just sitting here. I don't know. Am I supposed to be
And does he have enough fluid for that?
Well, because they're pumping me full of fluid. So the fluid's staying in. I was on total bed rest, was not allowed out of my hospital bed unless I was going to the bathroom, which Keith would take me to the bathroom back and forth. And I had like leg massagers on. I had my IVs. I was getting like blood drawn. I was getting shots in the booty every like however long. I was like, why the butt? Why the butt? But I had one nurse who gave me like a vitamin B shot at some point. She was like, sometimes people say this really hurts. She was an angel. It didn't hurt at all.
Aww.
I was like, you're a star, ma'am. I was like,
I would be
10.
Like, you come back in here and don't let anyone else in.
No one else can touch me. No, she was really good. But basically, like, labor's happening, all of that ends up, Henry ends up being fine. Oh, his name's Henry. Just to let you know. We were gonna do like a little reveal at the end.
Well, perfect little Henry.
Yeah, we call him Henny. But Henry makes it out, he's fine. The issue that I had during labor is things were happening where I wasn't going into like active labor, but I was having just horrific contractions. Like just really bad, really powerful. And because of the anterior placenta, it's hard to measure because it's covering where it's contracting. And with PPROM, you are not supposed to do, you're supposed to be very minimal with the cervical checks because of infection. Like even the doctors are like, I don't want to do it. And at one point I was like, I mean, we're already freaking. We told the doctor, we're like, we were supposed to do the, like, you know, it's not Lamaze, but whatever they call it now. I was like, we were supposed to do the baby class this week. I was like, we don't even know what's going on. We don't know.
Becky was texting our group chat.
Yeah, she was like, Becky was
I'm
like,
on Google, like, how to give birth.
I was like, oh my God.
I started a group chat with like 15 mom friends that I knew, and I was like, what do I do? What's this? What's that? And like, I think the one that we got really nervous about was when they started asking about pain medication, because I'd always joked my birth plan is an epidural.
Yep.
I was like, I walk in those doors, you put that needle in my back. I am not a pain person.
Mm.
Being pregnant was not something. I was someone who was more excited to be a mom and have a baby than to be pregnant and give birth. Those were two things that I had to do to get Henry,
right?
Yeah.
Which is the part that I love more. The other part was never for me. I was not looking forward to that. I wanted my epidural.
Right.
Unfortunately, this man what gets happened? In the room. They're finally like, you can have your epidural. Oh, so before this, they were asking us about like different pain medications that I could get. And I'm always cautious about anything I take because of being on Zoloft. You just have to be careful about interactions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. I've never looked this up. Like, we were planning on looking this up later.
Right.
But at this point, I was like, Keith had taken me to the bathroom. I had peed and he opened the door and I was just shaking, like,
oh, no.
Bouncing off the toilet in pain. And he was like, you have to take something. He's like, let's look him up. Let's try and find something. But you have to go on. Like, this is not.
Why hadn't you gotten an epidural yet already by the time your pain was this intense?
Because they don't do cervical. They didn't want to do cervical checks.
So they didn't know how far along.
They didn't know how far along. And that's where my labor wasn't progressing.
And they weren't using your pain as an indicator for a need for epidural?
No.
Because it could wear off if you were too.
Yes. If I will.
Yeah. If you weren't going to actually give birth for too long.
Yeah. And they had told me that. And I was like, okay, I don't want to like whatever. I don't want to get the epidural and then have it wear off by the time, you know, he comes. So I was like texting all my mom friends. And I literally said to this nurse at one point, I was like, I have so many friends that have given birth. Nobody has mentioned this, being in this much pain.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm saying this, I'm saying it very calmly now, but I'm like, crying, I'm like writhing on the bed.
You described yourself as feral.
Feral. Yeah, I said feral because I was just like holding on to the side, like pulling myself. I wasn't allowed to get up. I wasn't allowed to change positions. I'm not pushing or anything at this point. I am just laying on my back, like half screaming.
And usually you'd be able to like, at least like get up, bounce, wiggle,
reposition, anything. And I was just like in excruciating pain. And finally I was like, you have to check. And so they checked and they were like, okay, let's do it. We'll get the anesthesiologist. And I was like, awesome. Get them in the room. I want him now or her.
Yeah.
Get him in here. Or them. I want him. And so they send Keith out because they said it's a sterile procedure. Your partner can't be in the room.
I told you why they really did
And
that.
I was like, in retrospect, I'm like, oh, you sent him out because he was rageful when I told him what he said to me. So I'm on the bed and I have tears in my eyes. I am grunting. I'm, you know, in 11 out of 100, you know, I'm in pain. So much pain.
Yeah.
And agony. He goes, young lady, you have to stop writhing about.
First of all, don't say young lady.
And
young
I was like, I'm like blacked out at this point. I have no idea what I said to this man. But I tell my nurse, I feel like I should be pushing. And she goes, no. And I'm like, I feel like I should be pushing. And again, I'm saying this very calmly. I'm probably screaming at this nurse.
Yeah.
I think I should be pushing. She basically like opens my legs. Henry's partying. His little head is like, hello. She literally closes my legs, puts her hands on my hip, throws my phone at me, hits a button, goes, call your husband. I said, no, I need the epidural. Do the epidural. She goes, he's coming out. She's like, he's going to be out in 5 minutes. 10 minutes.
No.
And I was like, no. Keith gets in the room. I'm like, they said he's coming out and I can't have my epidural. And he's like, that's okay. We're going to do this. It's going to be fine. He's like putting
okay for you.
a cold rag on my face. I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do it like this. And no, like, I need it. I need
it. Oh my God. And he's already crowning.
It was Ring of Fire had already happened when I was talking to that anesthesiologist while I was just laying on my back. Like,
and he's telling you to stop writhing.
And he's
writhing
telling me
around.
To stop writhing. Yeah. And like, I am so out of it at this point that like Keith had to, they were trying to tell me to push by holding my breath and pushing and obviously screaming and pushing. And I was like, not understanding what they were telling me to do. So Keith was literally like, Becky, go. And he would just stare at me with his breath, holding his breath. And so I would do that. And so
did that help?
You know, I figured it out at that point, but I was so out of it that I was like, I had no idea what was going on. And you're so like loopy and your hormones are crazy and you're on drugs and you're like, you know.
Except for you're not except on except enough
I'm not
drugs.
On the drug that I wanted to be on. Oh, that was taken thing. Away. When that man left the room, I was like, no.
come back. You were rude, but come
I was
back.
Like, yeah, in Titanic. come back. Anybody out there? So Henry comes. The room goes from being, you know, me, the nurse, Keith, and like one other person was in there to about 15 people because they knew he was going to be premature. So he, you know, pops out. He's wrapped up. I get to like put my face on him for like 2 seconds and he's gone. Like they are. It was a runaway kind of situation.
The NICU team came and intercepted.
The NICU team was ready to go. They were all hands on deck. And then, yeah, that was birth. That was crazy. Oh my God.
I cannot believe how fast that was. Yeah.
I can't believe how fast. And the whole time you were in pain and wanting to push and they weren't letting you.
Oh, yeah. There was no, I've never gone to a hospital before. I only have like hearing Zach's experiences with like chronic pain or Kelsey's experience. People talking about like their pain not being believed. I've never had that personally happen to me because I've never been in a pain to not be believed. But at one point, they were telling me, like, oh, you should, like, watch a movie because it'll probably, like, help take your mind off things. And I was just like, oh, take my mind off things? I don't think this is, like, psychosomatic.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Henry's, like,
physically in pain.
His, like, the crown of his head is moving through your body.
And I'm, like, laying on my back still, like, chilling.
Oh my God. Chilling.
Like, it was just, I had never had that happen before, and definitely gave me obviously a greater compassion and empathy.
Yeah,
not that I didn't have it before for people who live with pain that other people don't believe, but like it was horrible. It was awful. Like
hearing your story too. Also, I feel like we all just take our moms for granted. I'm like, you did this for all three of us. I like think of my sister. I'm like, mom,
it's
you
crazy.
Did it.
Crazy. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And it's just, yeah, it was wild. It was a wild experience. For me, it lived up to what I thought, something I didn't love. But I think the hardest part was like every choice that I had thought I was going to get to make, I didn't. I had absolutely no choice in any part of, from probably like the minute we found out I had a bicornea uterus all through the pregnancy and then all through the birth, not a single choice got to be like my choice or like what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. That was very hard to like reconcile. And then, you know, you've given birth. Henry's out. He's with the NICU team. I can't go see him because they make you like lay down or whatever for 2 hours and probably make sure you're not totally loopy. And I had been in a bed for 2.5 days at this point, only going like 5 feet. So Keith went with him and we knew that was going to happen. We'd actually called Chris Reinecker because his baby was premature. And he was like, let me know if you guys have any questions, let me know anything. And I thought really good advice that he gave us was they're going to take the baby away and you're going to want to stay with Becky and be with the baby at the same time. You can't do both. So like kind of make your peace with each other and go be with Henry. So we had already talked about that. I was like, don't stay. I was like, as soon as he leaves the room, you go with him and just make sure everything's okay. So we did that. I got to see him like 2 or 3 hours later. And by like hour, I think 5, I was pumping.
Wow.
Like it was
that's so fast.
It was so fast. And they were just like in and ready to go. And like most of the nurses I had were like, you know, I feel like on TikTok sometimes you see the hi mama, hi mommy. And it is very true. That is how they almost all
they
of them
don't
came into
know
the room.
Your name. They're like, hi dad, hi mom.
Which it was really sweet. And like the first few people that came in were like, oh, congratulations, mom. Like everybody was really excited because I think it is that moment where you're like, I am very excited to be a mom. However, like this was not the best day of my life. This was like the start of a really unfun time in my life. And it wasn't until I had a nurse who also had a baby, had all of her babies at 33 weeks. She came in and she was like, I'm really sorry. She was just like, I'm sorry that like your choices got taken away. I'm sorry that like all the, oh, this part always makes me cry. And I'm like, don't cry. Don't do it.
You can cry.
I know. It just, it's one of those things where it's like, you see a lot of things about like having this golden hour with your baby and getting to like hold them. And, you know, you're supposed to be in the same room for 24 hours so that you can bond. And like, I didn't get to do that. All those things that they talk about, you know, oh, you should start trying to breastfeed right away because it's really good for your bond. And you're hearing all this and you're like, fuck, I'm not going to have that bond. Like, I'm going to be missing out on these things, which I'm not. I'm very, Henry and I are very bonded. Yes. He's my best friend. I tell him all the time. I was like, you're my best friend and I'm your best friend. But yeah, it's just one of those things that it's like, even when we would go into the NICU, there's like, there was like a list of things that were like tips for breastfeeding. And it's like, can we move this sign? Can we move this sign?
That's all well and good if it's good for you, but it's not how it goes.
And so that was very difficult. And especially, I mean, I guess we kind of buried the lead. We were in the NICU for 6 weeks. So we were,
long time.
were not in our home. We were,
You were in a vacation rental. It's like you weren't even like at your house.
Yeah. Which I will say for any like new parents that are looking on TikTok of like, you know, what you bring to the hospital to have a baby. I could tell you from my experience, you could bring nothing. You could have absolutely. 3 pairs of underwear and give birth and they will provide you with everything.
Oh my gosh.
They will give you all the things you need. But yeah, so the NICU, that was its own crazy beast where this is another part where I'm like, okay, doctors really need to work on their bedside manner. I could not tell you a single doctor that Henry had in the hospital. Not one. Couldn't tell you the doctor that admitted him, couldn't tell him that discharged him, couldn't tell you the one that was at rounds, but I could tell you that Patty and Lexi and Leslie and, you know, Ida, Irma, like all these women that were there, I could list all the NICU nurses. Yeah. Like, we saw them every day. They took care of us. They took care of Henry. No clue who those doctors were. So it was just one of those, like, very eye-opening experiences, which I'm sure, I mean, you're a nurse, so I'm sure you're like,
that I mean, hospitals, sounds about right. Hospitals can't run without nurses. That's why I'm just,
100% no.
We are the backbone of hospitals.
Not even the backbone. I think you're the front bone. I think you're the whole bone. You're the whole body.
You're body. All the bones.
All the bones, yeah. Things would fall apart if there weren't nurses.
Absolutely.
So being doctors just show up.
They doctors show are very up important. For like, but... Yeah,
they're very important, but they just show up for like 5 minutes of like glory and the nurses do everything before, during and after.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, the NICU was crazy on that discharge day because at our hospital, which we were very fortunate to have an amazing doula who also had the same thing that I had happen, PPROM, but even earlier than I had it. So she was very knowledgeable. She had a much longer, we were in for 6 weeks. She was in for much longer.
Wow.
So she was a really amazing resource into talking about certain things. Because even like, I would be talking to my friends and be like, they'd be like, how's it going? And I'd be like, oh, we're trying to breastfeed right now. We're trying to nurse right now. It's not really working out. And they would send me all these recommendations. And I was asking for them. You know what I mean? I was saying I'm having trouble. But the reason that I was having trouble is like, he can't suck, swallow, and breathe at the same time. So he's choking and I'm seeing him turn blue.
Right.
It's very different than a term baby who is having trouble latching.
Right.
Yeah. And it was like one of those things where I like kind of had to mentally be like, oh, okay, I need to either explain myself more or like not ask for that stuff. And so having our doula was just it was like absolutely priceless. And it was not price. I mean, it was a fee. It should be included in insurance. It is insane to me that every person who gives birth or has a child does not get that support.
Right.
Because it's so without her, like I always say, like I would not be as good of a parent if we didn't have our doula and if Keith wasn't as good of a parent as he is. Like without that support system, I would have like just cried all the time or like, you know, it would have been very difficult. But our doula was really good about being like, okay, you know, and during my NICU stay, this is what happened. And she would kind of try and guide us through the processes. But her NICU kind of let them go in blind and you were discharged when you were discharged. You didn't know. For us, we had a countdown. So what was happening to him is because he had an immature digestive system and an immature respiratory system, he couldn't suck, swallow, and breathe at the same time. So as he was getting better at doing that, What would happen is when he was bad at it, not bad at it, babies aren't bad at it, when his body was not functioning the way it should be.
When he was not to term yet. So.
When he was not to term yet. When he's negative 5 weeks old, he would basically suck on the bottle, choke, turn blue, catch milk in his cheek. Like, and we're talking tiniest little bit of milk. And he was getting more and more milk as he was there, you know. But
and that's kind of like that is not unusual. That's for a preemie.
No,
that's
that
not
is
like
yeah, yeah. That's pretty standard for where he was at gestationally. But towards the end, when he was able, he was very successful with the suck, swallow, breathe. Towards the end of his stay, obviously, because you get better as you get older,
and takes
you
practice.
Know, it takes practice, and you're having nurses and. Really just nurses. Not, I was about to say nurses and doctors come in. Nope, those doctors do not feed that baby. Those
OTs.
Nurses, yeah. Mm-hmm. Our occupational therapist, our respiratory therapist, both of them were absolutely phenomenal. But they were, you know, really helped us in like holding him up. You know, he couldn't, you know, when you see like a baby on TV, like Sarah and I always talk about this like fantasy that we have of like what childbirth and having a baby looks like, because that's what we've seen on TV. Like the birth you think is going to be this one beautiful way and then it's not and you're like kind of crushed. That kind of happened again with having a preemie, is where he was like, I'm like, oh, you see people, like I've seen my friends like holding their babies and they're like, you know, nursing. In their arm crook and they're, you know, giving them the bottle and or they're nursing and it's like so beautiful and like so sweet. Henry is like 4 pounds nothing laying horizontally on our lap. His head is fully in our hand, got a pinky under his chin, our thumb and ring finger on his cheeks.
So you can push up and push in.
Yeah, so we're holding, and then you're holding this itty-bitty bottle because he's only getting, like, a, you know, the smallest amount of milk anyway, because he was getting milk formula enhanced or fortified milk. And, yeah, that was just it. Fortified milk, my milk, and formula. He was getting those things, and you're doing paste bottle feeding. So, like, by the fourth or fifth time we had done it, our hands are, like, cramping. Our arms hurt. We're, like, leaned over like so uncomfortable and we're like, I can't wait to just feed you in a way that like we're both comfortable, because I feel like you're not comfortable either. So once he was good at doing that, or his body was good at doing that, then the next hurdle we had to jump was him not having those episodes of not like holding his breath and like not breathing when he was sleeping. And that sort of was the more scarier one, because when he's feeding, you're looking at him, I can see his face, I can, you know, they got us really, it was like baby boot camp. We were really good at telling his cues of like, he's uncomfortable, he's about to choke, he's doing totally fine. Like, we were able to distinguish that pretty well, but when he's sleeping, you're not staring at him every 5 seconds. So he had to get better at not, or his body had to get better at not holding his breath while he was sleeping and turning blue. So it's not what you want to happen to a baby while they're sleeping. So they would give us a countdown and they'd be like, okay, if he can go the next 7 days without this happening, you can go home. So we kept getting that for the last like 2 weeks. And then they were like, okay, if he can go 5 days, you can go home. So we're like, okay, we got it. No, that went back. They're like, okay, if he could get the next 5 days, he
it
could
would
go.
Reset.
It resets back to 5 or 7.
If he had like a non-breathing little incident.
Yeah, and Maggie was with us when one of them happened, and it was so fast. It was it has to be under a certain amount of time for them to, they would call it not counting it. And like when it happened, Maggie was like holding him.
I was like, the monitor, it looked like it was like not catching. I don't know if that one counts, but.
Yeah, we were like, I don't know if it counts. And you could just see, like, I would just, like, look at the nurse and be like, did it count? Did it count? And they have to, like, check with the doctor and come back. And they're like, yeah, it counted.
How are you and Keith doing at all these resets?
I know.
At the beginning, it was fine. We were like, we called the count imaginary. We were like, whatever. We don't even want to know what the count is because it doesn't matter. Because
you don't want to bring, he was like, he needs to be.
You don't want to get your hopes up.
Yes, which is what happened at the very last week he was there. We were on a 5-day count. It was day 4. And if he had made it through that day into the next day, he would go home the next day. And we got there. We asked the nurse first thing. We were like, hey, how's he doing? And she was like, oh, he's doing great. And we were like in our heads like, oh, yes. And she's like, well, he did have an episode. And I just like, I left. I was like, there's no privacy in the NICU. Like we had these little like cubbies that you could kind of build yourself. But like at this point, I was like, I just need to like go hysterically sob somewhere, because I thought we were going home. Like it was a Monday. I was like, we're going home on Wednesday. We're doing this. And that was the only day where I was like, I can't be here. Other than that, I had been with him every day.
After 6 weeks of that, like, that's...
It was...
You guys were so, like, in the beginning, I was like, my heart was breaking for you. Because in the beginning, when especially when you were feeling like you were missing out on the bonding, I was like, after you guys are like, he's exactly where he needs to be. Like, he doesn't need to be home. Like, we're comfortable. And then to see it drag on for so long, my heart was just...
Because it's like, as and you time knew passes, he was ready
by the end of that.
Yeah. I mean, he was close. Hard. He was close. We knew he was close because, again, we didn't... Every time we tried to tell ourselves, like, it's better that he did this here with a team of nurses looking after him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better that he did it here. It's better that he did it here. But that day, I was like, I can't do this. And I just left. I went and slept. Came back the next day. Obviously, the count had restarted. And we were able to go home at the end of that week, which was, like, huge. Because at that point, we did get to the point where we were like, okay, we can't stay here anymore. Like, paternity leave is obviously different when you own the company because it's not like you're getting, you know, it's not how it works.
Yeah.
But we were we had always said we were going to do 6 weeks. And so that was all of the NICU stay. And so Keith was still coming back to try and do some things here and there that he wasn't, like, that he fully was not able to not do. But we knew at the end of it, it was like, oh, we're going to go home and then we're just going to have this baby here and it's just going to be Becky at home.
And being, and readjusting to taking a baby home is so different from when your baby's in the hospital and you have people there.
Constantly monitoring them. I was joking with our nurse, Leslie, we just loved her. And I was always like, you're coming home with us, right? You're going to live with me? And she was like, no, I can't live with
I
you.
I have to stay here with the babies.
I have to stay here with the other babies.
And you were like, that sounds fine and all, but Henry requested.
Yeah. So we did 2 weeks just by ourselves once we got home to readjust to like what life was like. And those 2 weeks we spent with our doula. And she really gave us like, we had gotten a really good boot camp at the NICU. Like we could... He wasn't in isolate for a while, so we were able, where, you know, it's like a little baby tube where you, like, look in and you just put your two hands in. So, like, Keith and I could change that baby in 2 seconds, like, feeding him, burping him. We were copacetic on those things. But, like, the actual being with your baby for over 24 hours, we were not used to. So having our doula there to, like, show us, like, different, like, ways to comfort him, ways to, we had gotten good at swaddling. So that was a plus. But she was just really good at being like supportive of the like emotional part of it. And like adjusting to like pumping, trying to nurse, trying to, when he first came home, I just exclusively pumped. I didn't nurse at all. Cause at a point in the hospital, we stopped completely. Cause I was like, he's not gaining weight. Like I'm not, I want this baby home. I will, you know, I was formula fed and I love my mommy is what I said.
And he had his own unique needs. Like a lot of people don't realize when babies are premature, they eating, I mean, even for a term baby, eating is like a full body workout. So if he's expending more energy
than what he was taking in, I was like, I'm not playing this game.
And that's exactly why you had to fortify. Regardless.
And then so when we got home, she was very helpful in being like, okay, you just want to exclusively pump. Let's work on your schedule. Let's get your milk production down. When we did introduce more nursing, she was like, okay, here's some tips for this. Here's some tips for that. Like she was very
It's so nice that she could cater to what you needed at that moment. Instead of like an overarching like, here's baby class. Here's how learn the CPR. Here's how you swaddle. Feed them like this. But she could like respond to you and your baby.
Right? It was absolutely like we were so lucky and so privileged and so just happy that we could have her. Because we also don't have family here. So it's just me. It is a true like we're raised by a village, you know, like even when we were in the NICU, like I said, Zach and Maggie brought our cars down. They drove their car and our car so that we could have two cars. Matt brought us clothes. And literally at one point we're FaceTiming and he's like lifting up all my bras so I could point out. I'm like, Matt, no, the one with the clip. And he's like, this is a clip. And I'm like, not the right clip, Matt.
That's the clip to put the bra on, not for nursing.
Yeah, but he's going through and he did that more than once. Yeah, that's not a great job for a gay man. Yeah. But Ryan Garcia came over to our house and got our nursery chair, put it together. We had a second nursery chair that had been like back ordered. So we ordered this one as an emergency and we're like, we'll just, you know, whatever, send it back. And so we actually ended up both assembling and disassembling the same chair for us. He hung our mirror. The cats, my best friend Hannah, she came over every day to feed the cats because we were only supposed to be gone 2 days. So I just gave them extra food and water and was like, we'll see ya. We'll see ya on Sunday. And so she came in all the time. Zach and Maggie came when we weren't there. Nick and Rachel came to the NICU. Zach and Maggie, Matt, all came to the NICU to just like sit with us.
Yeah.
Even just like being able to like go out to dinner or like feel somewhat normal made like all the difference. And even now, again, it takes a village. Like right now, Keith is outside with Henry. I'm a never say never person, so like I'm not saying I'm never gonna get a nanny. Just right now, this is what we're doing. It's me and Keith and Henry, and that's our little life. But like, you'll be, when you watch Eat the Menu, there are a couple coming out. Nick Rufka is holding Henry off screen. Or like Erica or Rachel. Someone is like holding Henry.
Happy to do it.
Yeah. Which we did make sure everyone were like, you don't have to hold this baby. Like,
I was like, if you don't totally give me that baby.
Yeah. But like, and like Sarah, Miles' wife, has this mommy group that she started. And that has been like huge. She'll come over to the house for like 20 minutes with Julian. And like, we do not live very close to each other. So having friends that are saying like, come out, let's go do this, let's go do that, like leave the house.
Leave the house, Becky.
I think the most isolating part of being home was when Keith went back to, to going into the office every day and I was at home with Henry and it felt like I was trapped. I felt like I was trapped. Henry felt like he was trapped. He's a baby that loves to go out. We went to a concert with Zach and Maggie and Nick and Paul this weekend and he's just like happy as a clam being like outside, being held by people, like scooting around, like
and it is very daunting, like as a new, if you're by yourself at home feeling like you can't leave. And like, if only we could have like a third arm sometimes, because you're like, can you just hand me this really quick?
I just need one little, I'm like, I just need to take one little shower. Like,
just one, Henry. Yeah.
But like having friends come over and texting, like I think all of that like mom thread that I had started will still text and be like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Like, let's go get coffee or I'll come sit over. Do you need your dishes done? Like, because it's like, it's weird. We brought, we didn't bring a home a baby on day one. We brought home a baby who was a month and a half old.
Right.
And was negative 1 week old when we brought it home. So it's a very different, I feel like just the world's different. I was very nervous about during the pregnancy was people finding out that, not finding out that I was pregnant, because like, I mean, if you watch like that second Hunger Games video, I'm sitting next to Garrick. That woman is pregnant. Yeah. That woman, there is a baby popping out. Like I was ready to pop.
Yeah, I texted Miles. I was like, is it? She's pregnant. It's like, are we good for the release? And he's like, I think so.
It wasn't necessarily like, I don't want people to know I'm pregnant. At the beginning, sure. Like, we told our friends, maybe. Rachel, I texted the same time I texted my parents. I was like, Rachel, is this
I was
second
hanging
faint
on
line?
To every period.
Yeah, Rachel knew my ovulation cycle at this
period?
Point.
I got mine. Did you get yours? And she was like, no. And I was like,
Yeah.
I was like, maybe it's the full moon. We won't get excited.
But so she knew. I told Zach and Maggie, like, and Matt and David. And we weren't very secretive about it with friends and family. And the, I didn't want the internet to know about it sort of at the beginning stages because so much can happen. And like we were dealing with a high risk pregnancy where some of the things you Google that are horrible do happen. So I was like, I just don't want to introduce that because with my friends and family, I'm okay talking about if something did happen, I would talk to that, talk to my friends and family about that. That's not something I would talk about with the public or make content about. That's just not for me. But then once I was visibly pregnant, it was more about, I'm just not going to acknowledge it. Like, I'm not going to, like, I didn't want to buy a ton of new clothes. I was like, I'll buy some things. Like, so I was, you know, very visibly pregnant and people were like, honestly, I thought people were going to be more disrespectful than they were, but people were just honestly very nice. When we met them out in public, they said, congratulations. And like, they would be like, oh, we'll do a selfie. We'll just do our heads so that we don't see your body. And I was like, that's so nice of you. And like, once we got the okay from our pediatrician to take Henry like out in the world, I remember we went to Target. That was our first like big family outing where we wore him and we were like, we're going out. We're going to Target.
Target
all day. And a fan spotted us and came up and was like, oh my God, congratulations. Can I get a picture? And like our general rule is we just don't want to show his face on the internet. Like that's, you know, it'll be his decision when he wants to do that. So Keith just leaned down and was like, oh yeah. And like, just don't get the baby's face. And they were like, oh yeah, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. And like that has been the interaction almost every time we've met a fan. And if it's not the reaction, the other reaction is congratulations. No, 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 I don't need a picture. Like it's just been so nice that people are being so respectful. And like, I do think the idea of like taking pictures with other people's kids is getting more in the zeitgeist of people being like, oh yeah, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't share a baby's face that I don't know.
Yeah.
Without permission. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, let's not do that. And so, yeah, it's just been like, people have been really nice.
That's so sweet.
People have been honestly like the fans are very, very sweet and have been really respectful and respectful if we're like hanging out. Like we went to Shakespeare in the Park and a girl just kind of ran by us and was like, I love you. Can sit with us. Like didn't stop because she was like, I assume being like, oh, you're with your family. I won't interrupt.
Like, that's cute.
It was just nice. It's just nice. It's like one more like weight off your shoulders just because it's like, yeah, I don't want his face out there. I feel like. That's not a crazy, unreasonable request.
No.
And it's not like we're not going to talk about being parents.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've just told you about my birth, my birth story and our 6-week NICU journey. Like, we're not going to be like, oh, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, nothing. Went to the bar.
Yeah.
Like,
sometimes
went and partied.
In the middle of things happening that quick, I think that you did at one point want to tell the world that you were pregnant, but there was just so much going on.
It was just too much. And like, I feel like I personally still haven't processed like all the trauma that happened with the birth and like even feeling comfortable enough to say anything. Cause it's always like, well, I don't want to say something wrong. I don't want someone to, I don't want to invalidate anyone else's birth experience. I don't want to, you know, misspeak and call something the wrong name or like, I don't know. It's just so much pressure to like not say the wrong thing. And I'm learning that's just kind of what being a mom is right now or being a parent is because you're gonna talk to other parents who are also in the same boat of being like, I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Especially when it comes to child rearing. I'm sure like this is this is your baby.
You don't want to
hear that you're doing the wrong thing with your baby.
And it's like people want to share and that's their way of connecting. And sometimes you don't want that. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to connect in this way right now. I want to connect in a surface level way. You know, or like I'm not asking for advice. And that's coming from someone who's like gives so much unsolicited advice to literally every person in the world.
It's a little bit your job.
But it's like, I think it opens up the door for a lot of unsolicited advice that can add just more pressure onto something that was already
so stressful
and so tough. And like we wanted to do this episode. We were like, let's do it. Let's do it.
You didn't get pressured into doing this episode. No, you wanted to share. You brought it to the table.
Everybody, especially at second try, like the edit, everyone was very respectful. Like Zach and Maggie's wedding, people were like, let's just like make sure we're not showing, you know, too much of a pregnant Becky. YB was like, show whatever you want at your wedding. I was standing on the freaking aisle. Like, don't not share your beautiful wedding pictures.
That, like, a champ.
I was just like, you do not have to do anything for me to, like, hide the fact that I'm pregnant. I don't want the comments on your wedding being Becky's pregnant. That's why I didn't want people to see it. But no, it's fine. It's all fine. And that's why we wanted to say what his name was, too, is because we don't want to put the pressure on any of our friends or even like our like tertiary friends that we don't see often but are also on social media. Like, I don't want them to like accidentally say Henry and then be like, oh, God, I've told the internet this huge secret. It's like, no. His name is Henry. He's an angel baby.
We love him.
He loves coming into the office, seeing all of his friends.
Yes.
And yeah, you'll probably never, we're not going to make like a video where it's like Eugene babysits Henry for a day. Sorry, it's not happening. That's not happening.
Don't look forward to it.
Don't expect videos like that to come out. But he will be the baby in our lives.
Yeah, we will talk about
him. We'll talk about him. Our friends, we've already had conversations with all of them. Where I really like what like Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard do, where they just put like a little heart emoji.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and make a little Keith face emoji just to put over Henry's face.
Oh.
Just to give him his privacy for, you know, you for as long as he wants it or needs it.
I don't know if a Keith emoji is going to read weird. Keith is a little baby. A little Keith.
Keith is a little baby.
Wait, you should have Natalie. Or,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he has like a dedicated emoji that's always
We'll constant. Share it with our friends. Because we have so many friends with babies and so many friends that like we're going to do like a picture book of all of our friends when the first time they got to hold him. Like those are things we want to share, and we want to let our friends and family be able to share those things, but also give Henry the privacy of, you know, you can keep your face off the internet. It's okay.
I also think for those photos, you don't need the baby face. Like you just want to see the adult being like so excited and having babies kind of look similar.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, I know what he looks like. Yeah. Generally.
Generally. Yeah. He looks like a baby.
Yeah. But the moment is beautiful.
Yeah. But seeing, that connection between his aunts and uncles. Yeah.
When I came over in PJs. Cool.
Yeah, I know. I was also replaying my photo and I was like, didn't I cry?
Great. Everybody looked beautiful. It's a beautiful moment.
I think I was way too excited to see Henry. Henry is like looking at my face like, what is this? Why
he's
is
like,
this?
I love you. No, he looked at Maggie like, I love you. I love Who's you, Auntie Maggie.
Maybe we'll do the third time I held Henry.
Okay, we can debate.
Yeah.
I'll float through them. Give everyone,
Now that I know it's turning into a book, I'll get ready.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll do a photo shoot.
Maybe we'll do it when we dressed him in the girls in matching outfits.
Cute.
So you guys, we maybe talked a little bit longer than we thought we were going to talk. Who would have thought that we'd want to talk more than 30 minutes about childbirth, child rearing, birth trauma, the NICU journey.
I could talk 30 minutes about that epidural man.
Yeah. My anesthesiologist.
Young lady. young lady.
So what's happening next episode, young lady?
This young lady is going to let you know that we're actually going to have Keith come in for the beginning of the next episode that we're going to have. That way he can have his chance to share his experience and he still gets all of our wonderful feminine energy in here, which is going to be different than when he talks about it on the tripod. We're going to try and not have like a huge amount of, crossover on that. But thank you guys so much for listening to this story, for letting me cry in front of you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it feels very cathartic to like have it out there and be in the world. And thanks for listening. This was nice.
Thanks for sharing, Bex. Yeah, thanks for telling us.
And we'll see you guys next time. Just make sure you're washing your hands. I saw a TikTok where these girls were like, who needs to wash their hands? And I was like, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. You all need to wash your hands all the time.
That's disgusting.
Wash your hands, pee after sex, be nice to people, be nice to yourself. And saying bye from two moms.
Oh, two moms. Two moms and our Auntie Maggie.
Our Auntie Maggie. Our Senora Maggie. Auntie Maggie.
Yeah. Excited. Pia. Proud aunt.
Yeah. And this is our first episode back for me with Rainey on the ones and the twos. Woo! In her new position.
Oh, yeah.
Rainey,
new job. Who this?
Tell the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick.
Now I'm the producer. So, we'll see.
So Rainey's our new mom now.
Yeah. Exactly.
So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.